We're going to join Brant Snedeker. We'll see whether or not he thought I did a good job saying his name. But big news, by the way, we're going to keep you updated on. They are voting right now on whether the United States will host the 2026 World Cup. Fingers crossed that the answer is going to be yes. I'll update you as soon as that becomes official. But tomorrow we will be at the U.S. Open, which will definitely be taking place in the United States, and Brant Snedeker will be playing there. Brant, appreciate you coming on with us early this morning. What do you expect out of this course, and what do you think of the way I did your name there as you came in?
I thought it was pretty impressive. You know, 5:30 a.m., I guess, your time, so I'll give you a hall pass on that. But it's golf course is fantastic. It's going to be a very different Open in the fact that the kind of harken back the way it used to be, where it's going to be very, very difficult. I don't see under par winning this week. If it does, it might be one or two under par. The golf course is fair, very fair. The fairways are very wide for U.S. Open, but so if the wind blows here at all, it just, this golf course, Shinnecock Hills, is just a beast, and it's a great test.
A lot of times we see, based on the time that you go out, it can have a massive impact on what kind of score you can post. You just said you don't even know necessarily that the winning score is going to be under par. How much impact do you think the time of day you go off, depending on the weather, will have?
Massive, massive amounts here. You know, you want to be, traditionally, you'll be first off in the morning. You want the greens to be perfect. The wind's not blowing as much then. The course is a lot softer. I'm teeing off at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So it's going to be a completely different golf course than the guys see in the morning. And you'll see the stroke average vary from 2 to 3 shots probably between morning and afternoon. So, you got to understand kind of the time of day you're playing. The ball's going to go a lot further in the afternoon. The greens are going to be a lot faster, a lot more baked out, the wind blowing. And if it gets some sun on the golf course, it just kind of bakes it out even more. So you kind of have to be aware of where that is, understand that the golf course is going to change periodically throughout the day depending on the weather, and so kind of have to be ready for it. But as a general rule, most guys will be first one off in the morning, perfect greens, not as much wind traditionally, and softer golf course.
What is the toughest thing about this course? You kind of broke it down early in that first answer and said you don't think that anybody's going to post that good of a score. But as you stand on the first tee box and get ready to look out over this course, and for people out there who will be watching, as a guy who's played a lot of U.S. Opens now, what's going to be the toughest about this particular golf course?
This is more of a second-shot golf course. So the approach shots to greens because of the wind here. The wind, it seems like it's always a crossing, quartering wind. We never have a straight downwind, straight into the wind hole, except for 17 is probably the only one we have on the golf course. So every hole, you have to get the wind right because the greens are so small that if you leave the ball in the wrong spot, you can literally – be there for an hour and make a 10. You know, it's the 10th hole is a great example. People watch it this week and just kind of love it because it's going to be a lot of big numbers on the 10th hole, even though it's a short, relatively easy hole. The green's just extremely difficult to hit. There's a huge runoff in the front of the green, a huge runoff in the back of the green. You literally can go back and forth for 4 or 5 shots to get the ball in the green. So making sure you hit your distance numbers this week, making sure your distance control is on point is going to be huge, and making sure you get the win right.
I think a lot of people, when you said that the score will be probably 1 or 2 under par at best, are like, whoa, that really kind of is what the U.S. Open is known for, but it's something that has not necessarily happened the last few years. Do you think the USGA has kind of gotten it in themselves to say this year, hey, we're going to go back to the kind of what people are used to in the U.S. Open and not allow somebody to just run away with this, not allow the low scores to pile up?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. I think part of it's the golf course, too. The golf course just lends itself to that. The golf course, Shinnecock Hills, is a traditional, tough, just old-school golf course where there's not a lot of tricks to it. You just got to play great golf. You know, I think Erin Hills was a great unknown. We played last year, and the scores were so low, so they didn't really know how it was going to play. You got to realize they've had, I don't know how many U.S. Opens here, at least 3 or 4. So they have a lot of historical data to go back home and make, okay, this is how we set it up then. These are the pin positions we use. This is kind of the score dictated with this win. So they kind of know what the golf course is going to lend itself to. Now, saying that, the fairways are a lot wider here than they play here in 04. But the green complexes, and there's about another 500 yards on the golf course since then as well. So the golf course is a lot longer than now, and the rough is the rough that we do have is pitch-out rough. I mean, you're lucky to find your golf ball. If you find it, you're going to be able to advance it maybe 50 yards. You know, it's not something you see guys knock on the green out of the rough. It's just not going to happen this week. So kind of harking back to the old school U.S. Opens. I first started playing when I turned pro.
We're talking to Brant Snedeker. He's going to be teeing off tomorrow. There's also a lot of talk, and I don't know if you've experienced this yet, that getting to the course is tough. I saw somebody tweet that it wouldn't shock them if somebody missed their tee time. Have they kind of given you guys the sense that traffic is awful? Hey, you better be there really early or project time in? I mean, I know Tiger pulled up his yacht.
Guys, I can't wait for you to get up here. You're going to really enjoy that commute in. it's 2 to 3 hours, you know.
Oh, my God.
The host hotel, which is about, you know, 6 or 8 miles away as the crow flies. So, I mean, it's just a nightmare right now. It just depends on what time of day you come. So, guys that have afternoon tea times are going to be okay, but the morning tea times, they're going to have to leave at, you know, 4:30, 4 o'clock in the morning to make it, because if you leave at 5:30 or 6, the traffic's just awful. There's only one road in, one road out kind of deal, and there's no way to get around it. It's just, there's a fender bender or something like that, it's shut down. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. So, that's the one bad thing about being here. If you're staying west or east of the golf course, you're fine. You can kind of come to opposite traffic, but if you're staying anywhere west, it's just a nightmare getting in and out.
Now, how does that impact your kind of thought process when you're worried as a golfer about making sure that you're going to be there for tee time? Does that take you out a little bit of, I mean, and you're waking up at 3:30 or 4 a.m. to make sure that you're there? Because I think the first guys are teeing off at 7 a.m., if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. No,
I mean that's got to be tough to go to bed at night, right? You know,
it's not ideal. No, I mean, luckily I'm staying within walking distance, and I don't have an extra bedroom. Otherwise, you could stay.
That would be amazing if you had an extra bedroom, because I think we're 40 miles away, and that's a media hotel. It's not even like I'm staying, you know, that's how few hotels there are in the area.
Oh, there's just nowhere to stay. Exactly. So most of the guys are around here, or they're staying in the host hotel. The host hotel, I think, is 9 miles away, and they have shuttles and everything they're doing. They're doing everything possibly can to get guys here. It's just a, you know, 40,000 people coming down a one lane or two lane road. There's just not a lot you can do. So, it definitely becomes part of the mind game of the U.S. Open, right? You're not going to be sleeping well. You realize you're going to have to be spending a lot of time on the golf course where you're not having anything to do, which most guys don't like doing. We don't like just hanging out on the golf course all day waiting for a tee time. It just kind of makes you even more anxious, and kind of trying to get in your routine is kind of thrown off. So, it's just one of those things you have to deal with. Everybody has to deal with it. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to kind of cull the traffic a little bit. But I just see it being a big issue for guys this week.
We're talking to Brant Snedeker at Brant Snedeker on Twitter. Now, have you ever visited Tiger Woods' yacht before? I understand he's pulling up a $20 million yacht. Like, that's kind of a baller move in general, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've walked by. I've never been on the yacht, but yes, I've seen it.
I always enjoy thinking about the difference on the tour, right? You've got guys who are making a ton of money and have their own $20 million yacht, and then you got guys who are hoping to make a cut so they can pay for a, you know, Southwest flight to get back home. How much difference is there in the locker room as you get ready for a big U.S. Open between, I'm sure when you first started, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that's Phil Mickelson. You know, these iconic names, and then you're just hoping to make it. How much of, like, what's the vibe like in a U.S. Open locker room as all these guys get ready to go out and play? Because there's a big difference between the superstar and, frankly, a lot of guys that nobody would know at all who are just ecstatic to be there.
Yeah, this week's a totally different week than most weeks on tour. Most weeks on tour, you kind of see the same guys. You kind of know you're all the same, you know, in the same walk of life coming out here on tour. In the U.S. Open, you have a bunch of guys who have qualified, who have never played on tour before, a bunch of inner kids or a bunch of college kids or a coordinated club pro who's there been. So you walk into a locker room, you really don't know half the guys in there. So it's a totally different feel than most normal weeks on tour. And the way they have the player dining set up this week is a huge tent. You're in there with a bunch of people who you don't know, and it's a weird, different dynamic. So it's a totally different feel than a normal week. And most guys this week are always stressed out anyways, so it doesn't help. You know, when you're walking around not knowing anybody and kind of trying to figure your way through the locker room, you know, people are asking for autographs in the dining room. You're like, wait a second, I thought this was my time to get away. And so it's just a different feel, but it kind of adds to it. You know, it's probably, the U.S. Open is probably the hardest tournament to win because it does a great job of making you uncomfortable from the minute you step foot on the property.
Talking to Brant Snedeker, he's at Brant Snedeker. I'll tweet out his Twitter handle. I encourage you guys to go say thanks for coming on and ask him or thank him for getting up early with us. Last question for you. This course, I think, sets up pretty well for you. Who else does it set up well for that you have seen? You think, oh, this course really kind of fits so-and-so's game for people to be paying attention to as they come in?
Yeah, you have to look at guys who are great scramblers because there's going to be – so this is Phil Mickelson, finished fourth and second year. There's a reason why, because his short game is so good. I think Jordan Spieth is going to have a great chance this week because He's probably one of the best chippers and wedge players in the world. You know, look at guys like that that can get it up and down. Patrick Reed will have a good chance, even though it's so hard to win one major, let alone win back-to-back. But guys that can get it up and down and kind of survive when things aren't perfect, because there's nobody can go around here and hit 15 greens at four straight days. This is not going to happen. The golf course is just too hard. So you got to look at guys that are going to really, you know, get the ball up and down when things aren't going great. You know, I think Phil's got a really excellent chance. He's playing good. He's built for this kind of golf. You know, it's just if he can stay away from the big number this week, he'll be right there with the chance to win on Sunday.
So will you, I hope, because I got money on you. We'll talk to you if you win on Monday, or probably either way, regardless. I appreciate it. Congratulations on getting to walk to the course, and let me know if somebody moves out of the house, because I'd like to stay there.
I will. I'll let you at least survive one day at the hotel just so I can see hear how miserable it is.
I appreciate it. It's Brant Snedeker. Go follow him on Twitter at Brant Snedeker. He'll be teeing off tomorrow morning with us. We'll be live at the golf course tomorrow. By the way, I'm watching. I think it's a good sign. The U.S., I believe, have they won? They just stood up and said, yes, the U.S. has officially won the 2026 FIFA World Cup. I mean, that is breaking news, literally, as we are live on the air with all of you. United States, Mexico, and Canada, live news. The U.S. delegation celebrating has beaten Morocco. Breaking news, yes, live on the show. If you are a soccer fan, it's disappointing that the U.S. will not actually be in the World Cup, but major breaking news, the U.S. has been awarded the 2026 FIFA World Cup. So 8 years from now, as the World Cup gets closer, this is massive for United States soccer, for the growth of the sport. It will be the first time since 1994, I believe it was, when the U.S. hosted the World Cup. And frankly, soccer was just a pinprick kind of on the horizon of the sports universe. This is massive and goes a long way towards helping to wipe out the disappointment over not advancing to Russia. If you are a soccer fan, if you are a sports fan in general, this will be an incredible environment to be able to host this in 8 years. Everything FIFA coming back to the United States. This is a big win for United States sports. There was a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not the U.S. would be able to get this bid, given how rigged FIFA has been before. Russia seemed like they bought this World Cup. Qatar seemed like they bought the last one. It's a little bit like getting a top recruit to your college football or basketball school. I don't know what happened, what went into it, but major breaking news, the U.S. awarded the 2026 World Cup. LeBron James now favored to go to the LA Lakers. We bring in our guy Jeff Schwartz, as we do every single Wednesday. Schwartz, you grew up in LA. Do you think LeBron should go to the Lakers?
Well, I mean, I'm a Lakers fan. Of course I think he should go to the Lakers. I think at this point in his career, it's not so much about winning championships. I think it's about building his brand. But also, he can do something that Jordan never did, right? He's always going to be compared to Jordan, which I think is kind of unfair at this point, but that's where we are. And if he goes to L.A. and essentially rebuilds the Lakers into a championship team, you know, he can say he's rebuilt three franchises now in the Heat. That, you know, they were a good franchise, but they weren't winning without LeBron, and obviously the Cavs, and then the Lakers. So, I mean, that's his motivation there. And it's, you know, it's Los Angeles. It's where you want to be in December, January, February, when it's cold in every other city. And I think that there is not a perfect team for him to go to, and that's partly why I think with – not a perfect team to go to and not a perfect setup, that you just go to the place that accommodates your family the best and it gives you the best lifestyle, and that's Los Angeles.
See, I just, when I look at what the Lakers can do, and Danny G, you can hop in there as a future Laker All-Star, I just, give me the best possible scenario, Danny G, for what the Lakers could do to have a championship, to win a championship with LeBron. Because when I look at the landscape of the NBA right now, I say, okay, LeBron, let's say they can bring in Paul George too.
Yeah.
That's a team that might win one series in the Western Conference and then would get run by either the Rockets or the Warriors. Now, if you're telling me LeBron's going to go to L.A. and he feels like he's going to make so much money from entertainment that he doesn't have to take a max contract and there's the ability to bring in other players on top of that,
I know you don't like that. You don't like that argument, though, about the entertainment and production company.
I mean, I don't buy into the idea that being in LA is going to make LeBron more efficient than if he's in Houston.
Yeah.
Or if he, like, when you are a superstar, there are tons of huge superstars. Like George Clooney has a house in Italy. it seems like George Clooney's still kind of a big deal in L.A. when he needs to be, right? Like, so I think when you are a superstar, L.A. comes to you. I think before he started to go bankrupt, if I'm not mistaken, Johnny Depp had a huge estate in France. Like, you have a plane. You can fly to L.A. if you need to. But when you're a bona fide global superstar, they find ways to integrate you as opposed to you having to integrate them.
Well, how about this? Because no other team could offer this. Lonzo Ball will put LeBron in a music video and rap about him.
Do we have audio, by the way, from LeVar Ball saying that he should call him L.A. Bron? Like, I think we have audio of that, right?
Yeah, we'll find that for you.
We'll play that in the final segment of the hour for people out there who haven't heard.
About the diss track, yeah.
Yeah, Lonzo and LeVar and everybody else.
It's Lonzo versus Kyle Kuzma right now. But look, Kyle Kuzma, what was he, Jeff? He was number 24, the 24th pick in the draft. And everybody thought it was just kind of a throwaway pick. He turned out to be one of the brightest young stars on the Lakers squad. The Lakers have a pretty deep bench, and Jeff has talked about this when he's filled in on the show before. The Lakers, I think, have a lot to offer in the same way the 76ers do, and I think LeBron would actually fit better with the Lakers than he would
there
the
76ers. There is a 0% chance that the Lakers would win the title unless there's massive injuries.
I'm not saying they would win the title, but he could go deep, and he's going to bring a couple of stars. He would need to take a little bit of a discount,
though. Here's the deal. Why don't we assume, by the way, that the Rockets are going to be amazing again? You know, the Warriors, I think, are it feels like they're getting – here comes my crying daughter in my office. It feels like they're going to be – you know, they're getting close to their end of their run. You know, dynasties end sooner than we think. And so I think it's – you know, to just assume the Warriors and Rockets are going to be just these fantastic teams for years to come – it's probably not the right assumption. I think if LeBron goes to L.A., he can build something up. It's not a championship to win now. The only place he can go to win a championship right now, I guess, is theoretically Houston. If he goes to Philly, he's not doing it now. If he goes to L.A., he's not doing it now. So it comes down to what lifestyle do you want to live? I think that bodes well for Los Angeles.
Well, I think here's the thing on LeBron. I think that no matter how many performance-enhancing drugs he takes, at some point, he is going to start to decline, okay?
Yes.
At 33 years old right now, he had a great year. He's going to turn 34. Look at what happened with Kobe. As good, and hello to Jeff Schwartz's daughter. Good morning. As good as Kobe is, he fell off a cliff precipitously with the Lakers, and the Lakers were left. They had bought this massive contract with Kobe Bryant, and they had no way to actually contend for a title with him. And so I wonder on some level, is 35-year-old LeBron James suddenly going to hit the wall and be a shell of the player that he was prior to that time? I don't know what that age is where the decline will happen rapidly, but I think at some point age and mortality when it comes to athleticism wins, and as great as you can put yourself into keep yourself in shape and as physically dominant and superior as you can be, at some point LeBron is not going to be as good as he was before. And so again, I think that the only reason why LeBron James should continue to play basketball is to try to win titles. And I think the odds of him winning a title going forward with the Lakers are low. Although we got LeVar Ball, he's back in the scene. He was on the Fox lot yesterday, and this is what he had to say about LeBron to LA.
I don't believe LeBron's going to be a Laker. I know he's going to be a Laker. I told you to call him LA Bron.
There's LeVar. You say he should go to the Lakers. My argument is he should go to Houston and try to win a championship there. My other argument is take a lot less than the max guarantee. Jeff, you've been an athlete, and you signed a couple of decent-sized contracts. It's different for and I think you would agree with me, that you were like a role player, right? Like, you want to get as much money as you can when you are trying to make as much money as you can. But pretend that you are Aaron Rodgers, let's say, and pretend that you have come close to maxing out your contract money over the course of your time as in the league. At the end of your career, would you have been inclined to take less money to try to win a championship if for the previous 10 years or 12 years you had maxed out as much money as you could?
Yes, and I would have done that considering my career. You know, I signed my big contract with the Giants, so I'd gotten paid, and then, you know, year 9 or 10 or when I was getting toward the end, I would have definitely, if I was had the opportunity, I would have signed for maybe less to win a championship. As, you know, let's say New England called me, you know, I'd be inclined to maybe do that. But I think when it comes to contracts, a lot of it is ego, right? So if you're Aaron Rodgers, it's a great example. You know, you want to be the highest paid guy. Now, LeBron for a while has been the highest paid guy, but it keeps getting obviously upped every year, and someone takes that role from him. But if he's also making a lot of money on the outside, whether it's with his, you know, production company or whether it's advertisements, then yeah, he could theoretically take less. And to your point about him, you know, aging at some point, he's going to age obviously at some point. And again, would you rather age in Los Angeles or age in Philly or in Houston? I mean, I think that's all part of this of this decision. I don't know if he feels that way, that he's aging anytime soon, but he cannot play the amount of minutes he played last year this year. It'd be great if he took less money. I mean, maybe Magic Johnson, I think this is a big part of it, is LeBron has never trusted anyone in Cleveland ever, besides maybe David Griffin, though, his old GM. He trusted Pat Riley in Miami. I think he'll trust Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, and I think the trust factor is a big deal for him. I'm just assuming this. I don't know, but I kind of imagine he's tired of trying to build teams, and he just wants to maybe just play basketball and worry about his lifestyle. I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing on that, but I think he'd be over that. It hasn't worked out. Him as a GM does not work.
I'm on this, and I'm going to be on this pedestal and on this soapbox for a while. I don't understand the concept of your ego demands that you make the max contract. Let me take it outside of LeBron. I have a healthy ego. Let's say that I have a healthy ego, that I think having a healthy ego is a big part of success, because you have to believe in yourself long before anybody else will, right? If I were convinced that I was the best sports talk radio host in the country, and I had proven it over the course of a decade or whatever, and somebody else was making more money than me, it wouldn't really bother me, because I would be making plenty of money doing what I do, and I would look at it and say, you know what, I get to do my show from Nashville, which is my hometown. I get to live with my family. Could I make more money moving to New York or LA and do my show there? Maybe. And I'm in Manhattan right now. It's a great place to come and visit and do the show. I've spent a lot of time in LA. I think it's a great place too, but Nashville is home for me. So if as a result I have to make $2 or $3 million less to live in Nashville, some people out there might say that's crazy. My argument would be, if I'm the best radio show host in a country in a decade, the difference between me making $7 million a year and me making $10 million a year would not be that much different. Some of you out there are saying that's a crazy thing. I don't think that dollar figure is going to be crazy in a decade. And so I would take several million dollars less to stay in my hometown. And it wouldn't be me being like ego driven and saying, oh my God, like I'm making less than somebody else. Like if I know I'm the best, I don't need to see it reflected in the dollars.
Well, I think it's hard to compare, especially football. I'm talking a lot from a football perspective. It's hard to compare football to any other job. I mean, you just mentioned it. You can have this job for 30 years. So if you're not making the most money now over your career, living in Nashville, you know, being with your family, it evens out. In the NFL, you don't have that option, right? Your career is short. So you have to take the most money and as much money, I think, as possible. Now, at the end of your career, I mean, we've seen Chris Long now, you know, do it 2 years in a row, where he went to New England and went to Philly for less money and you know, in the hopes of winning a championship. So at the end of your career, you can definitely do that. But I understand why NFL players, I was that type, right?
I totally get it for the NFL, because your career could end on any play. You don't have that much guaranteed money. But at the end of your career, when you're sitting around saying, hey, I've only got like 3 years left or four
I would
years
take
left.
Less money. No, I understand. I would totally take less money. But look, LeBron, I don't know if he feels the same way. I mean, he hasn't shown that he feels that same way yet. I mean, I think that if he goes anywhere he goes, he's going to might have to take less. I mean, Houston doesn't have much money. I don't know what Philly's situation is. I mean, LA has the money, but again, if he wants to build a team around him, he's going to have to take less unless they trade for Kawhi or do something creative with their roster. But I get the ego part of it. I get why people want to be paid the most. But look, you're right. Family, you know, family comes into this. Like, I mean, if your situation is set up to where you're at home or you're by your family and it's less money, that makes a difference. You know, the less money kind of outweighs or the family time outweighs the money.
Yeah, this is where somebody needs to sit down with LeBron and say, hey, the legacy that you are going to be remembered for is whether you win championships or not. When you hang up the tennis shoes, so to speak, and you are officially done as an NBA player, you're going to have, like, let's say $900 million as opposed to $1 billion. $100 million sounds like a lot of money. But when you've already got $900 million, if you can't do everything that you want to do with $900 million, I don't know why you're going to change your lifestyle and go lose in the first round to make an extra $100 million, right? I mean, to me, it's just a no-brainer. I don't even have that much money in the grand scheme of things, and I feel like I have, like, everything that I want now. I can't imagine if I had $900 million versus a billion. And whoever you are out there listening, is your lifestyle going to change if you have $90,000 in assets versus $100,000 in assets? Probably not. I just think the play here for LeBron is go wherever you can win a championship. That's what's ultimately going to matter.
But I don't know if championships are going to matter anymore, because if you won six, let's say, you know, everyone would say, well, he lost six also. And to me, the comparison to Jordan is just not. I mean, he's not Jordan, and I think that's.
I don't even think. Yeah, I don't even think it's about comparing with Jordan. I think it's just if you could go to a third different city and win a third different championship there, I do think that would be a hell of a legacy to have as you ride off into the sunset. Jeff Schwartz, take care of your daughter. We appreciate you joining us here, and we'll talk to you soon. You are a guy who moved from the middle part of the country, Indianapolis and Kansas City, to L.A. Do you think LeBron James is going to follow your pathway to the Golden Land, Jason Whitlock?
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say he's going to move to Indianapolis. I go back and forth. You know, I get caught up in what group think, and everybody says that LeBron's coming to the Lakers, and then I think that LeBron's going to do something surprising and stay in the East. And so I would put it this way. I'm 55% sure he's going to join the Lakers. The other 45% of me says he figures out a way to stay in the East with the Philadelphia 76ers or somebody.
We had decision 1.0, and that led to Miami. We had decision 2.0, and that led back to Cleveland. Decision 3.0 is still to be determined. How much interest do you have in decision 3.0 compared to the first two decisions?
That's a great question. I was really interested in the first one. Wasn't that interested in the second one, although, you know, I thought the decision to go back to Cleveland was a great right choice. I'm not as interested in this decision because I think it stamps. I don't like the fact that LeBron James is going to be a journeyman. I think it sets a bad precedent for other superstars that follow in behind him. I don't like this thing of just superstars going from team to team. I'm into rooting for my team. And, you know, it's like I'm a lifelong Pacer fan. And when Paul George left, it irritated me. It pissed me off. And so I just don't like the precedent that's being set that the greatest player in the game is just a guy that hops from team to team. You know, I guess Shaq did it, played for four or five different teams, but I just don't like it.
Other thing about decision 3.0 I would point out is that as long as the Warriors stay together, it's not like this changes the expectations of which teams are going to be great in terms of contending with the Warriors. And so, in general, I think until the Warriors kind of break up, the NBA is just playing for second place. Do you agree with that as well?
No, I don't. I don't. I think that LeBron this year took, you know, mostly role players and should have won game one. And if they had won game one against Golden State, I just think that entire series is different. I still think Golden State wins the series, but I think it's a seven-game series if they win game one and Golden State has to fight for it. So if LeBron goes somewhere and gets a Paul George and one other really good player, I think he will have enough to knock off the Golden State Warriors.
What do you think about LeBron showing up in his press conference in the cast?
Look, man, there's much to like and enough to dislike about LeBron James. He is a flawed character, a flawed champion. He's a child star. He's royalty. He gets worshipped by the media. And so that makes him a bit delusional and loony from time to time. I compared it to, you know, what was wrong with Ted Kennedy and the Kennedy family, and they get worshipped and so when Ted Kennedy gets involved in a situation where he needs to take responsibility for something, he just can't do it because that's just not the way he was raised. He was raised in a state of delusion. Obviously, what LeBron James did, not as bad as what, you know, Ted Kennedy did, you know, not even on the same planet, but the delusion and the lack of responsibility and the need to change the narrative. That's why I compared it to Ted Kennedy putting that neck brace on when he went to that funeral or whatever. You know, LeBron James struggles taking responsibility for failure. He, you know, we call him King James. He acts like a king.
When you look at LeBron, I always say this. He has a lot of people who surround him. I'm surprised that somebody wouldn't have said to him, hey, man, just get the cast put on if you really need a cast after the 16-minute press conference. Like, it's not that big of a deal that you need to have the cast on for 16 minutes, right? Like, your wrist is not going to heal that much faster if you've got this cast on for the press conference. I think it was LeBron wanting to send the message, hey, we lost, but I wasn't at my best. And, oh, by the way, the reason we got swept was because that idiot J.R. Smith forgot to actually call a timeout, and that's why I was so angry that I had to punch a dry erase board. Look at what I did carrying all these, you know, has-beens and lightweights to the finals. Let's focus on how good I was and how much better I could have been if I had just been able to be healthy. Like, that's the clear message that he's trying to send.
Look, he said it all season. He celebrated every accomplishment more before the media could, or directed the media. Hey, I just scored my 30,000th point, or I'm the first guy with X number of points, rebounds, and assists. And, you know, he did it all season. He celebrated LeBron James, and the media followed right along and celebrated him. Clay, I was more astonished because I'm not that surprised by LeBron James anymore. I was more shocked at just how the media at that event refused to even question him. You know, again, he comes out in that cast, and as far as I could see, no one said, hey, LeBron, man, that was really a terrible effort we just saw in Game 4 of the NBA Finals. That looked like the NBA All-Star Game. That looked like the Pro Bowl. Is any of that on you? You just took 13 shots in a deciding game of the NBA Finals. Did you give your best effort? And then, you know, the question, you know, for him to come out and say, I punched a chalkboard and hurt my hand, I would have been, LeBron, how bad a leadership is that, that you, in your 15th year, you couldn't control your emotions in the post game? We saw you melt down on the sidelines after J.R. Smith did, you know, the stupid thing that cost him the game. But even after the game, you were still melting down, and therefore you hurt your team, hurt yourself, cost them a chance to compete against the Golden State Warriors. Explain that. You know, is this a knock against your leadership? How bad is this? Because what LeBron James basically said is like, J.R. Smith did something stupid, and I said, well, hold my beer.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something dumber.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think the idea that it's different if you're like a 17 or 18 or 19-year-old kid. But when you're 33 and you're still punching inanimate objects because you're upset at things, especially, and again, I would go back to what you just pointed out, he's got a lot of time to get over it. You know, that wasn't a close overtime game once they got to overtime. They got run. So he had at least a half hour to get over the fact that the game ended in overtime the way it did, and the J.R. Smith decision. Can you imagine how people would have reacted if LeBron had broken his wrist and had been out for the rest of the series? I mean, he's lucky that it didn't happen, because that's the kind of thing that would have shaded him forever.
Well, just suppose Kevin Love had done it, how we would have trashed them for, you know, that level of stupidity. And again, no one's virtually no one's saying anything about LeBron James. Look, I tend to believe him. I mean, there's some people, I've seen the video of him doing push-ups before game two. You know, he's slapping five with his kids after game four. There's some people that think he's faking the entire injury. I do believe he had some minor hand injury. I don't think he's faking that. And so that's why I just think he deserves some real criticism here. He's supposed to be this great leader. Everybody goes on and on and on about what a great teammate he is and how he's the smartest guy in basketball. I'm someone that at this year during the playoffs, I compared him to Larry Bird in terms of just basketball intelligence and the way he plays the game, particularly for a guy that physically gifted. And then he does this. To me, that takes that comparison off the table. It's almost as dumb as J.R. Smith not trying to score the basketball after grabbing that rebound.
We're talking to Jason Whitlock. Go follow him on Twitter, at Whitlock Jason. I don't know if you've even seen this news yet, because I know you're waking up on the West Coast like a lot of people are. It's a little bit after 5:30 a.m. Pacific time. United States, Canada, and Mexico has been awarded the World Cup in 2026. This could be pretty massive. Fox will have it. The game, 60 of them will take place in the United States, 10 in Mexico, 10 in Canada. I'm sure when you were growing up, you're a lot like me. Nobody played soccer in Indianapolis, I bet. Certainly not in the area you grew up. Where I grew up in Nashville, nobody played soccer. I mean, interestingly, soccer in America, at least early on, was a rich kid sport, whereas in the rest of the world, it's a poor kid sport. What kind of interest do you have in soccer? And in 8 years, what kind of interest do you think you'll have in the World Cup taking place here?
Look, I'm very interested in the World Cup when America is playing in it. And so, you know, we need to qualify and make the World Cup in 8 years. But I'm sure, regardless of what's going on with America, in 8 years, I'll be a lot more interested in it. Every time I watch high-level soccer, I'm just amazed at the athleticism and the grace and just how the game, even though it's low-scoring, it's still an exciting game. And some of the things I see the athletes do, I don't think any other athletes can do. So I have some interest, but you know, a growing interest. But you know, is it American football? Not quite. But you know, I have a respect for soccer and the World Cup, and look forward to it being here in America.
One of the things that we talk about regularly on this show and also with you is how crazy and zany the world can be now. When you saw Dennis Rodman being interviewed in Singapore, if we could go back in time 20 years, I got a couple of interesting questions on this angle for you. I think the degree of crazy and eccentricity and uniqueness of Dennis Rodman, I'm not even sure who the modern-day Rodman is in the world of athletics. So if I could go back in 20 years' time to 98 when the Bulls won their third title in a row, and I had told you, hey, Jason Whitlock, 20 years from now, Dennis Rodman is potentially going to be instrumental in bringing peace to the Korean Peninsula and taking away nuclear weapons and making the world a safer place. Is there anybody in sports in 1998 you would have considered less likely to be involved in that than Dennis Rodman? And can you think, we tried to do this on the show the other day, I can't even think of who a modern-day American athlete version of Dennis Rodman would be. People might say Draymond Green, but Draymond's not like that interesting off the basketball court. He seems like he'd be a regular dude.
Oh,
he's an irritant.
Comparison.
Who you got? Who is it? I don't even know.
It's Odell Beckham.
Well, that's not, somebody came up with that one.
Yeah, Odell Beckham would be the guy who 20 years from now would be Dennis Rodman. I don't even know what to think about Dennis Rodman and his role in this. And just Dennis Rodman just still seems so weird. And so, I mean, he's got the earrings in his lip and nose. It's baffling and mind-blowing to me. And just someone did a collage of all the different styles of dress and different ways that Dennis Rodman has presented himself over the years. And it just blew my mind, and it did make me think, this guy is at the center of world politics. And it makes me go, was Dennis Rodman a CIA agent the entire time he was with the Chicago Bulls?
I mean, on CNN, Jason, they referred to Dennis Rodman as the man in the world who knows Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump better than anybody. I mean, this is like, if you were trying to satirize this, like, satire doesn't exist in this country anymore because the things that actually happen are more ridiculous than the things we could imagine happening.
That is true. I just, I guess, look, if you're judging it on Dennis Rodman, I guess it just says what Dennis Rodman, Donald Trump, and Kim Jong-un all have in common, they're all pretty freaky. That must be the common denominator.
That would be a hell of a party. And Donald Trump doesn't even drink, which makes it even crazier to me. Like, if he drank all the time, sometimes some of the things he would say, I'd be like, okay, well, he's tipping a few back. He doesn't drink at all. So imagine what Trump drunk would be like. We're talking to Jason Whitlock at Whitlock Jason on Twitter. Okay, we get into a lot of these controversies sometimes with you. I think probably you are a man who has been around a few fast food restaurants in your day. I am a fan of Chick-fil-A. Absolutely love this place. I don't even know if you saw this controversy. The CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, apologized for posting the fact that he had eaten at Chick-fil-A during Gay Pride Month. This, to me, is one of the most ridiculous made-up controversies I have ever seen. First of all, and maybe this is just me, I didn't know that June was Gay Pride Month. Secondly, I've got a crazy idea. You can like chicken sandwiches from a fast food restaurant and also support gay rights. Where are we going down the rabbit hole of absurdity in the world of social media where you have to apologize for the fast food sandwich that you eat now?
What is the controversy with Chick-fil-A and Gay Pride?
Back in the day, Chick-fil-A's founder, S. Truett Cathy, is a very religious guy, and he did not support gay marriage. So his organization, through Chick-fil-A, had donated money to some anti-gay marriage, political groups. And so that turned into a controversy. Most people, I think, out there right now just say, man, I don't care about the Chick-fil-A policy. They're not open on Sunday. It's kind of a sign that they're a little bit religious. Just make a good chicken sandwich. But Jack Dorsey having to apologize for eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich is peak outrage culture.
And so if he eats Chick-fil-A in May or December or April, it's all good. It's just the month of June.
That was the specific thing, that it was being particularly disrespectful because it's Gay Pride Month.
I used to not, when people would talk about the culture war and they're coming after religion and things like that, I used to roll my eyes. And I no longer roll my eyes. I do believe that there is such hostility now towards Christian values that, and you have these cultural icons and shapers of our culture and influencers that have all now been geared towards a hostility towards Christian values. And look, most people that were raised Christian had to evolve as it related to their point of view and perspective on gay issues. I get it, but you know, we have to allow people to evolve, and we should applaud people evolving, and or we should just be respectful that there will be some disagreement on certain things. So yeah, that in June, our country's going crazy. It's not, we can laugh these things off, but it's just not good.
Amen. That's a perfect way to end it on Wednesday. Enjoy the U.S. Open. Thanks for waking up early with us. It's at Whitlock Jason. Go follow him on Twitter there.